the Gone Boss Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Howell.
And I'm your host, Angie Rogers Howell.
What is the Gone Boss Podcast?
Well, it's a weekly podcast featuring awesome people in our community. We'll interview them, find out what makes them tick, the cool things they're doing to make our community a great place to live and work, and how they've gone boss.
Interact with us on Facebook and Instagram just by searching Gone Boss.
Now sit back, relax, and find out who has
gone boss. In the studio with me, I have Willicia Scaife. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Well, tell me a little bit about yourself. What do you do?
Okay, well, I'll tell you about myself. I would start out by saying that I am a dreamer and a visionary. I am a wife, a mother, and a grandmother. I'm an advocate, passionate about children and families, especially those deemed marginalized, mentor, just a servant leader. I really believe that that's what this is all about. Even the title of the podcast, Girls Gone Boss, I really believe that boss for me means someone who believes that leadership is influence and influence is service. And so just honored to be able to serve and use my gifts to be a blessing to others.
What's a typical day look like for you?
Typical day looks like answering lots of emails first and then meeting with people in community. I work primarily with adults, helping to create positive systems for children, working with educators, working with community members, working with parents, just to ensure that our kids are getting everything they need and that we are kind of enveloping them as a community of people who are concerned about their success, not only in school, but in life. And so pretty much everything I do is about that kind of work. I'm able to really feel blessed to work in my passion, and I consider even my marketplace work ministry. And so that's important to me. Everything that I do is about helping people to be their best, to live out their dreams, and that's helping me to live out mine, because that's what I want to do, is really be that kind of assistant, that kind of encourager for people.
All right. Now, does somebody foot the bill for this? Like, yeah, who pays you?
Sure, right. So, again, I combine, for me, all of its ministry, but I am employed by Ball State University.
Okay.
So, I am the Professional Learning Specialist for Culturally Responsive Family and Community Engagement. That's one hat that I wear. And in that role, professional development is pretty much what I do. So I work with educators in school, pre-service, out-of-school time educators, helping to bridge the gap between school and teacher, family and home, which tends to be have its tensions, but really is the place where we ensure that kids are getting everything they need. If we can come together and partner and really work together and really elevate the voice of family and community that's often overlooked in marginalized spaces. So that is really the heart of the work I do. But I also have my own business, Willicia Scaife LLC, where I do that work, educational consulting and training for school districts outside of Muncie, really any place that wants to learn more about cultural responsibility, cultural resilience, being able to help people understand, again, the importance of hearing the voices of those who often go unheard, elevating those voices, and then recognizing the expertise in those voices to really help us to do a better job at the work we do. So it's this idea of, if I'm going to serve people, I really need to know who they are, so that I'm serving alongside and it's not my dreams being fulfilled or what I think they need, but I'm hearing them and then asking, can I come alongside and really work in partnership for the success of all of us? I think we're all transformed when we do it that way. So that's the work that I do in my LLC. And then my husband and I also have a business. We own Legacy Life Security Solutions. And so our number one client is Muncie Community Schools. So we do all of the security in the schools in Muncie. And then we have security services we provide to others as well. And so that's also a service. We never planned on doing that. My husband was a police officer for 12 years and retired and is the pastor of our church. So we also have that work that we do, pastoring and leading the church. But there was a need in our school, a desperate need for security. And so he volunteered for a while, and then we decided that we would just make this a service. And again, for us, service is hearing and seeing a need and then stepping into that space with gifts and talents that we have to help to remedy the need. And so we really feel, again, privileged and blessed to be in the schools. To be able to connect with kids and families in a way that honors them is important to us.
Give me some of the top of mind issues that you deal with in this line of work.
So I would say, again, this idea of what's really important to me is that communities and people who, again, have been identified as marginalized, those low-income communities, families in those situations that so often, and I've been there, so often we feel like people are doing things to us, sometimes for us, but hardly ever do we feel like they're doing things with us, and very rarely do we feel like we're leading that the work that's being done or whatever change is going to be made, that it's a change that we desire. It's a dream or vision that we have, and we're being allowed to say, here's what we want, and yes, you can join us, and yes, we need resources and support, but we need to drive the bus on this. We need to dictate kind of our own dreams. We want to be what we call the architects of our own imagination, and getting people to share power or shift this power structure so that people who, again, are deemed not to have a voice or not to have power really are able to operate in a way that, no, I do. I get to choose, and you get to be a part of that. And so I think that is definitely the passion behind the work that I do. I think I stepped into, like when I was a kid, like most people, I had dreams of what I would be when I grew up. But being a teenage mom and living in and out of poverty really kind of shaped my life and helped me to see what my passion would be. And I think in that season of my life, I realized that, you know, people who are poor are treated often like they're a number, like they don't know, like they don't have expertise in certain things. And I think that people don't realize, for example, in high poverty communities, especially tribal communities, so African-American communities, communities of people of color, that even if it's not wealth in terms of income or money, that there's so much cultural wealth there that people don't recognize. So I even say often when I'm sharing about the Whiteley community, which is the community I live in and love, people will call our community poor, but I know that Whiteley is rich in all the things that matter most. So when you start thinking about, well, what does that mean? Well, we try to elevate some wealth and wealth capital over others. Well, money is important. We know that, but so is navigational wealth. How people learn to navigate a system that was not created for them, and in some cases, a system that was created for their failure. So when, for example, students get to the place where they're starting college, I want to applaud students who've grown up in communities like these because they've figured out a way. They've been able, with support from family and others around them, to navigate a system and get to this place. So when they graduate from college, we're celebrating when they go on because we've been able to navigate a system. Well, that's navigational wealth. Aspiration. So in my community, again, as a teenage mom in a community and even in a family at times that maybe could not always help with money, these were the people saying, yes, you're having a child, but you also still have dreams. And now this child becomes a part of that inspiration for you to live out those dreams. So don't stop dreaming. Don't stop going to school. Don't stop pursuing the things that you desire. Well, that came in loads and loads, you know, in my life. And so aspirational capital is a part of our wealth. Certainly familial capital, just having family and extended family in community or church family, all of those things. Resistance capital, the ability to resist against things that people are maybe offering you that are not good for you or things that others think you need, but that's not a part of your dream. So being able to resist and push back in healthy, positive ways so that you could continue to move forward. And so there's a whole list actually of cultural wealth I could talk about. But for me, that's what I'm passionate about, again, lifting and elevating voices of experts where others maybe don't view them as experts, but there is, you know, what we call community wealth and funds of knowledge in places and spaces where others don't recognize it. There's expertise, you know, in the man in the community who, you know, didn't get past third grade. The wisdom and life experience and things that we can learn from him, that's invaluable. And so again, it really is about, for me, elevating the voices of people who are not often listened to and learning from those people. Because again, in communities like ours and many, you know, all around the United States, really around the world, I think we miss the opportunity to really listen and learn from those communities. And when we listen and learn, we actually learn how to help children more from these experts that are external. Now, there's some value there, but actually more from those who are part of the context or the community that kids have grown up in. So that's really been important for me and in the work that I do.
Now, tell me about your ministry. Religion's a big thing with you.
Yeah, absolutely. My relationship with Jesus is everything, and that is what really guides my work, shapes my work, and frames my work. And so when you ask me about ministry, again, it's everything for
It's
me,
everything, but you have a specific thing,
I
right?
do. So I have a ministry called Breathe Life Ministry, mm-hmm. and really, again, the goal is really to connect with people, especially women, but really, really all people, and listen to their dreams, listen to their vision, the vision they have for their lives, and try to do what I can do to support that. Something I call peer empowerment. I know that we often talk about empowering people. I don't really know that we empower people. What I believe is that when we come together and we have honest conversations about what we want, life's challenges, all of those things, then my testimony connects with your testimony, or something I've experienced connects, or maybe they don't connect, but we just are there to support one another. And so the mentorship and the discipleship piece behind that, we are all built up. So I call that peer empowerment. And so that's a big part of the work that I do. And so I have the opportunity. I am also a licensed preacher. So I have the opportunity to preach more formally in spaces and places and share that vision and share that encouragement and motivation, but also more mentorship and discipleship, one-on-one small group, having Bible studies, writing books to share the message as well.
Now, you mentioned Whiteley and being around here. Are you a Munsonian? Are you from here?
Absolutely. Born and raised right here in Muncie.
What keeps you here?
Ooh, I love that question. I think I probably answered it already, to be honest. So again, my mother was a hard worker. Our family, because of different circumstances, bobbled in and out of poverty. You know, we kind of rode that line that you hear often about, where you make too much money to get the assistance, but you don't make enough really to move forward the way you want to. And so my mom really worked hard and you know, took care of us and was just really, she's my shero. I have a beautiful family, extended family of help and support, church family. But I think as a teenage mom, again, as a teenage parent, I then experienced my own levels of poverty and you know, feeling marginalized and all of those things, and having to get assistance from the government, all of those things. Again, that experience really helped shape what I would do. I didn't know that then, what I would do with my life and how it would serve others. So I always tell people, my husband and I, so he was my boyfriend then, so we're still together. When we got married, we struggled financially for sure, had lots of love and support, but we struggled financially. When we got to the place where we could afford to move out of Whiteley, out of Muncie, out of Indiana, and live anywhere else in the world we wanted to live, there was no question. We've never questioned or thought about living anywhere else but in Muncie and in Whiteley. And it's because, how do you leave a place for us that has poured so much into you? I'm telling you, I am not making it up when I say that our community is so rich in so many things that have helped keep us going. So we really feel called to be where we are. And a big part of that is because we've been loved by, we've been encouraged by, we've been poured into by a people in a community. And so we want to give back and pour back. So we really feel like we're on assignment. I tell people even about the work I do. I am paid from Ball State to do the work I do. I get paid to do some of the things I do in my business. We get paid to do some things. But we really feel deployed and not so much employed. We feel like we are called, we are propelled into the work we do because we've experienced the love and the support from so many others. So we're on assignment. That's why we stay. We're on assignment. We don't feel like we have to be in Muncie. And I know a lot of people, you feel a certain way about Muncie. We love Muncie. Muncie is not all that Muncie can be, but we are happy to be a part of all that Muncie is becoming. And so even with the struggles, we love to be here. We want to be here, and we want to help this be the place that we know at the heart, we feel like Muncie is that. We have people who want to come together, who want to serve, who want to see people successful. We want to see that for Muncie, and obviously really feel called for that in our community. And so we're committed to that. We wouldn't be anywhere else.
Now, take me back from teenage mom to Ball State University. What's that look like? From education or work or what?
Right. So my educational journey has been long. I mean, I was 30 when I earned my undergrad at Anderson University, and I was pregnant with my youngest child, literally walked across the stage pregnant with her. And then I was 40 when I finished my master's program at Ball State on that same child's 10th birthday. And I think that that's significant because a big part of my push to finish my degrees was my children. I remember reading a statistic when my oldest child, Juwan, was about 5, and it said something like, your kids are 35% more likely to finish college if you do. It was just little numbers and things, and I held on to things like that, and I wanted that for them. Didn't know what they wanted for themselves, but I believe you dream your child's dreams before they can dream their own. And so that stuck with me. And so even times when I wanted to give up, because I, you know, after a while, you're like, okay, I'm married, I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm working, you know, do I really need to continue to go to school? Can I really could just, you know, work hard and ensure that my family is taken care of. My husband was working. But there was something in me that I started this journey of education wanting to get certain things, wanting to get these degrees. And I just, that was something I wanted for me and something I wanted for them. So honestly, even with my master's, I was already working a job that I was not qualified for. Again, I count that a blessing. So finishing that master's had nothing to do with making me more marketable. I was happy with what I was doing. I didn't necessarily need to move up, but I just had to finish it. I started it. I had to finish it. And even now, I just turned 50, 22nd of February, and PhD is next. Not because I feel like I have to do this because I've got to have some letters behind my name or for anybody else. First of all, I love education. I love going to school. I'm stressed when I'm in school, but I am a lifelong learner for sure. But it's just something I want for me and in a sense, something I want for them. So it has really been my own desire to finish. And just, again, the aspirational wealth of people saying, just go on and do it. You can do it, Lish. That's my nickname. You can do it. But also with my kids in mind, maybe it's even a sense of wanting to make them proud. I don't know. But certainly my children and my own desire just to finish those things academically have kept me going. So all through, you know, our marriage and raising kids, I don't think there was a time that, especially my son raised during his time at home, when I wasn't in school. So Wani is 32 now, almost 32. And, you know, what he knows is mama's going to be in school somewhere. She's going to be making herself better in some academic space. So
what's a piece of advice you'd give a young person just getting there?
Yeah. You know, I would say, I think I would start with this thought. You know, even with the traditional schooling, I think we kind of have it backwards. We kind of teach kids that as they go along in education, in formal education, they'll figure out what they want to do. And a lot of times because of that, young people get stuck. So you start college as an 18, 19-year-old, what? Mm-hmm. You have no idea, in most cases, what you really, really want to do.
Oh, and now they're pushing out hard in high school.
Yes, yes.
You've got to figure out everything you're going to do by your sophomore.
Yes.
To go on that track to get
right to
college.
And I understand the thought there. We're so desperate to keep them going. But I really think that, and a lot of times young people don't get this, but if I could give kids space to get to know themselves, I'm not saying while you're in school, mm-hmm. but do the things you need to do to be successful in school, pass the test, go to the next grade. But I wish we could create space and time in schools or in other places where we actually help kids to get to know who they are. Because I actually think your destiny is within. Dr. Miles Monroe is a quote he uses, and I believe it. Our destiny is inside of us, not ahead of us. So if I can figure out who I am, like how I'm created, or what my lean is, what my passion is, what my purpose is, and it takes time. But if I can figure that out, then I can use higher ed as a means to an end. I think that's what it's supposed to be, but I think often it actually kind of becomes the end. But then I could, and then maybe it's not, higher ed is not a four-year university. But I don't feel bad about that because I know my lean, I know my passion or my purpose. So I'm going to find and connect to those things that get me where to the place I know I need to be. And that may not be, you know, a formal educational experience beyond high school. So I wish that we could give kids a chance to really dream. We talk about dreaming, but really give them a chance to dream and get to know themselves and to vision forward for themselves with some support, of course, so that they can make, I don't want to say better choices, but choices that will satisfy them. Because I think you and I know there's nothing worse than getting into a job because you've been trained for it so long. And now you've spent so much time training and so much money mm-hmm. for that education or that training that you just stay with it because you're supposed to, because it's comfortable, you know, it's convenient. And you just kind of begin then to live for retirement. Yeah, I wish we could do that different. And I know some countries do that better, but I certainly think in community we can. So that's what I would do. And actually what I try to do when I talk to young people is not discourage them from a track of education. We want that. But education is not limited to these formal systems. So what do you like to do? And I think I know some kids, and I had my own daycare for a little while at home, and I know some kids who are really good with their hands. And so I had a little boy in my daycare who would take aluminum foil and make people out of them. Well, when he got to school and he played with paper, he was reprimanded for that. And I understand the tension and stress of trying to get kids to pass. I mean, unfortunately, teachers can't dream much in spaces these days either. But he was better with his hands. And so he wasn't as successful in traditional education. But if he would have had an opportunity to do some of the traditional things, because we know that's still a part of the system, but then had this freedom and liberty to create with his hands. And then if he could have been his intelligence measured somehow by his artistic expression, you know, that would have helped him feel more positive about it and really encouraged him to take that track for his life. And so now he is, you know, he had some struggles to school, but now he's kind of turning things around. He's seeing, this is who I am. Let me get into this. But look how many years it took to get there. So I don't know. That's kind of a long way to answer. But I definitely would say start out by just saying, you know, what is it that you like? I don't know that we ask young people enough that question. You know, what are your hopes and dreams? What do you envision? What do you enjoy doing? What do you feel like you do? You feel like you're called anything? And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, only because they've never had a chance to think about it or been asked that question. Parents are not often asked, you know, what are your dreams for your child? And how do we begin to talk from that space and build forward? So out of many things I think I'd want to say to young people, that's one of the spaces and places I would start.
What's on your bucket list? What do you want to do before it's all said and done?
Well, one of the things I'm going to do, and that's go to Hawaii. It's coming up. My husband and I will be married 30 years in June. And
congratulations.
So something, thank you, we're going to do. I don't know. I used to think about, I love to travel, but I get to do that a lot now. My grandbaby is a year and a half. It's our first grandchild. And it's interesting how having a grandchild changes things in your mind and the way you plan for things. And so I think I would love to be able to work in the work I feel deployed to do in my own business, mentorship and all of those things, and be with my grandbaby. That's all I can think about a lot now is this. So I don't know. Yeah, I have to really think about that. I know what it would have been, you know, 5-10 years ago, but it's changed.
You've accomplished things.
You know, usually I'm thinking about what I haven't accomplished, but I guess if I stop and think about it, I've accomplished things, but I think probably more than that, my desire for what I've wanted to accomplish has changed. I had what people would say were the big dreams of this and that. And what I figured out is that it's some of these things that maybe seem smaller to folks that are really more important. And so back to how we started, like I'm serving people. I guess I've always kind of had a servant's heart, but I would have never imagined that at this point in my life, I would feel so satisfied with the reality of being able to really, really serve people well. I have this quote I use that says, you know, what I want to be able to do, enter uncomfortable conversations in unfamiliar communities with the willingness to listen, learn, and love well. And so if I can listen, even if I don't agree, I know that I'll learn something about you or the people that are there. And what I hear and what I learn will help me to love them well. And if I can love people well, and I believe that's through serving, I think I would die empty. And I think that's the goal, is to die empty, to die after you've done all you can do, served all you can serve, you know, loved all you can love. So right now, that's where I am.
What's your favorite band or artist?
I love worship music and a variety of artists and genres. So I would just have to say worship music.
Are you an early bird or a night owl?
Oh, I so wish I could say early bird. I am someone, my husband and I, for years, our friends and families knew we were the ones up till 3 or 4 a.m. in the morning. And that has changed as we've gotten older, but still,
You're a night owl.
I am. I don't want to be, but I am.
What's your favorite book?
My favorite book is a children's book. And interesting, I think that's one of the reasons why finding culturally responsive children's books, which is something that I do, is important to me. Seeing yourself reflected in books, I think that's one of the reasons why kids struggle with reading, is because they don't see themselves. So I was 38 years old when I found my favorite children's book, and it is called I Love My Hair. little black girl in the front with braids and beads. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, that is my experience. And when I got, so it's one thing to see it and think, oh, this reminds me of me. But then when I started reading it, it was my story. And so I carry that book around with me, but that's my favorite book.
What's your guilty pleasure?
Okay, guilty pleasure. And I'm going to call it this my guilty pleasure because it's the thing that probably keeps me up late. So at the end of a day, everyone knows my favorite thing to do is to have a fruit smoothie that I make and a bag of shelled David's jumbo sunflower seeds. And even though that's not necessarily a bad snack, it's the snack that keeps me up at night because I break the shell. I don't eat the shell, break the shell, go through the hole, have the hole set up. It's an event truly. So that's what I love to do at the end of the day.
Do you have a favorite movie?
I don't know that I have a favorite movie now. For years, one of my favorite movies was True Lies with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't know why, but I just love that movie. I don't watch a lot of TV now, but so I'm just going to go with that.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest today. Really appreciate having you in.
Thank you so much for the time.
It's been a while since we pulled out the book, 2,000 Questions About Me, which we got from Five Below for $5 a few years ago.
Several years ago.
There are 2,000 questions in here, so I thought we'd answer a few today.
Okay, sounds good.
When you were a kid, did you have any posters on your wall? And if you did, of what?
You know me, I grew up under a rock, so it's not like I had regular posters on the wall.
I'm sure you had a big DC Talk.
I might have had a DC Talk. I probably had Carmen. I probably had a Carmen poster.
If you like Nirvana, you'll love DC Talk.
Only the last album, not any of the other four ones before that. Anyway, so I probably had those or like some, I think that was it, but I didn't really have posters on my walls, I don't think.
So growing up, my brother was 4 years older than me. So we did have posters on our wall. It was mostly Iron Maiden posters.
Iron Maiden, huh?
I didn't even listen to Iron Maiden, but they had the greatest artwork.
Did they have like scantily clad ladies?
No, they were more devilish. Had a mummy guy named Eddie. He's kind of their mascot, that whole thing. I had a few Ozzy Osbourne posters up that I got from my Hip Parader magazine or my Circus magazine.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. I put those babies up there.
I bet you did. We found in some of the stuff your mom was going through, she found a notebook of yours from high school.
Yeah.
And you had carved into it, Hail Satan.
I was trying to let everybody know that don't mess with
where you stood on things, yes.
I had an aunt who was really worried about me in high school. There.
I was going to say that. No wonder she thought you were definitely going to hell.
She was a cook down in the kitchen, and she thought for sure my soul was
doomed.
What is your favorite thing to barbecue?
I like it when somebody else does like
chicken,
like a pork roast or whatever, or like a
pork
like a hog roast or whatever. Yeah. I like that. That's nice, but I'm not going to do that because that's
so
a lot
you
of
can
work.
Pull it apart and have pulled pork.
Yeah, I like that. But if we're like at
pulled
home,
pulled pork sandwiches, pulled pork tacos.
Pulled pork nachos. You can
don't even go to the nacho thing again.
I know. So if somebody else is doing it, I like pulled pork. But if I'm doing it, like burgers or whatever. But my mom is really good at chicken. She makes good
blackened chicken. She calls it, but it's barbecue chicken.
Yeah, but she likes to make her pieces extra blackened, which I say no thank you.
Should graduating high school be mandatory?
Yeah, some kind of like, I think that's the least you can do. Go to high school.
You know, they're changing the rules and everything, the Core 40 and all that.
Yes.
Big issues coming down the pike about that.
Yeah. But I think,
that should be the minimum.
Successful person in life, the minimum should be graduate high school or an equivalent thereof, like GEDs, all that kind of stuff is fine, I think. But, like, I don't think you'd necessarily have to go to college or whatever. But, like, high school, I think that's a bare minimum.
I'll agree with you on that. I'm sure there are exceptions to
the rule.
I'm
sure there
and
are exceptions, but I think we can make it through high school.
What would be the best exotic pet you would like to own?
No pet. A pet rock. That's the only kind of pet I want, really.
No monkeys?
Actually, I would, if...
A pet monkey?
I would love a pet monkey. They're so cute. The little spider monkeys? Oh, they're so cute. But do they want to be pets? Probably not. They'd rather be out in the wild.
See, I would want to go to a tropical island, live there, and have a pet monkey. And then charge people $20 to take the picture with the monkey.
Well, that's just because that, right?
I am
almost
a money-making
happened to
fool.
You. Yes, I know. I also have gotten onto bird talk, like on TikTok, people with their
bird
like,
talk.
Yeah, with their birds, like parrots and cockatoos and things like that. And yeah. they talk and they do all their things. They're cute. I don't want them because they're like little dinosaurs in cages, but I like to watch them on TikTok.
Have you ever danced in the rain? Like gone outside and danced in the rain?
I don't think so. Maybe when I was a kid, but probably not even then because I was really an inside kid.
When I was a kid, there was a drought. It was a very long period of time without any rain.
Yeah, that's what drought.
It's very dry.
That's what a drought means, right?
I know. But I'm saying when it did, when the heavens opened up and it rained, I remember going outside and I wouldn't say dancing in the rain, but I ran around like a crazy person with buckets and gathering up this rain because we had had no rain for so long that I was just like, oh my gosh, this is so nice.
Now, I do know when I lived in California, and we lived in the desert, so there was no rain. So any day that it did rain, everyone lost their minds. And if we were doing youth group and all the or the teachers in schools were like, oh, man, it's a rainy day. These kids are wild because, like, you just never saw rain. So that was exciting.
What song makes you sad the moment you hear it?
No. No.
Anything on my Sad Dora
Your
playlist?
Your entire Sad Dora playlist makes me sad. You answer first.
Well, I was going to say, the one that makes me sad, of course, is that Sarah McLachlan one.
Oh, no, the arms angel, of an angel with
yes.
the little puppy lungs and the
Exactly. Thing. Every time you hear that, it's like, oh, I'm so sad.
Okay. Well, I have a dumb one, which you know.
Well, you better let everybody else know.
Because it's so dumb. It's the every step you take. What's I'll be missing you.
I'll be missing you right. by P. Diddy.
By P. Diddy.
Recently been in the news.
Man, this is terrible. But I'm going to say it anyway. So not the Sting version.
No.
The P. Diddy version, which is terrible and
P.
dumb.
P. Diddy and Biggie. Biggie Smalls.
Yes, yes. Makes me cry every time
she
I hear it.
She cannot listen
to it. I cannot listen to it. Now, it's because it came out in, like, what, 1997 or something?
96, 97.
It was right when I was in my car accident and my friend died, and it came out right after that. So every time I heard it, it made me think of her, and it still makes me think of her. And every time I hear it on the radio, it makes me cry. Now, on the positive side, I bet we're not going to be hearing that on the radio very much anymore after the recent news of P. Diddy.
What was a game changer in your life? Just one thing.
One thing? Well, I think when I moved away,
yeah.
I was 20 years old and I moved to Texas and I was living in Dallas and whatever. Now, the circumstances around that and the person that I moved with was not great, but I think that really did help me determine who I am and who I want to be and what I don't want to be and all that. And so it really helped shape me and helped me grow up in ways that I probably might not have. Because even now when I get around people from when I was a kid, kind of revert back to like the way you were when you were a kid. But like moving away made me grow up and discover myself, I think. How about you?
Well, for me, other than big life changes such as divorce and marriages and all that kind of stuff,
me.
I will say a game changer for me was actually BNI. So back in 2003, was working for a web design development company and was kind of in a shell of I hated public speaking. Hated it.
Don't we all?
Now, I was in radio. I could talk to many people with a microphone in a room by myself. But when it came to standing up in front of people, did not like that. It was the worst thing ever. So what BNI did for me is it made me every week go into a room of 30 to 40 people, stand up, say my name, what I was doing, and, the referrals I wanted. It was that simple, but that changed everything for me to get me comfortable enough to talk in front of a large group of people.
And now you can do it no problem.
And that's a game changer.
You'd still rather be behind the scenes and not
Absolutely.
Speaking in front of
That's
people.
Why I take photos and do my thing.
Do a podcast, right?
Exactly, because I can talk to all of you fine people, and not have to see you.
Excellent.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Gone Boss.
Be sure to check us out at GoneBoss.com or #GoneBoss.
We're on Instagram at GoneBoss2K or find us on Facebook just by searching Gone Boss.
If you like what you hear today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you find your podcast.
Have a great rest of your day, and don't forget to tune in next week and find out who has Gone Boss.